Joshua of Egypt, Book 1, Chapter 1, The Alternate Past. The gods can bleed, Killian declared, then grew angry at his pupil. Are you paying attention, Joshua? Joshua, a 20-year-old olive-skinned man, answered. What? Killian, a man dressed in traditional Egyptian garb, said, I am here to instruct you. Master Potiphar has been kind enough to allow you, a farmer's son, to have proper instruction. The least you can do is pay attention, Joshua said. I'm sorry. Killian gave off an arrogant, half-cocked smile. You are still daydreaming about Mose. Joshua didn't answer. He merely looked down at the slate in his lap. She is the daughter of an Egyptian governor. You are the son of a farmer who works the land for that governor. Longing after her is pointless, Joshua said. His other daughter married a low-born man? Correction, Joshua. His other daughter married a war hero. Damien gained a reputation in the war with the gods, defeating many enemies, and brought home a vast amount of spoils. He is a strapping youth, a war hero, and respected by all the commanders of Egypt. That is far more than you can claim. Then I should become a war hero. Killian huffed as he said, You don't even know about the war. You haven't been paying attention to this lecture. Then teach. Finally, your ears are open. Okay, where was I? Killian looked down at a scroll he had written on. Ah, yes. The gods can bleed. You know the legend of Prometheus? Yes, Joshua answered and then recited. Prometheus brought fire to mankind, and for this the gods punished him with eternal torment. That is a myth. The truth is, Prometheus brought something even greater than fire to humanity. He brought knowledge. Many years ago, before the dawn of the Egyptian Empire, Prometheus brought the knowledge of truth to us. He taught ancient man that the gods are not as powerful as they claim. They can bleed. They can die. However, unlike mortal man, gods do not age and may live eternally, unless their lives are taken. For this, he was punished and ultimately killed. Killed? I thought they bound him to a rock or like a bird pecked out his liver. Also, what could kill a god? Killian said, You know we are currently in a state of war with the heavenly realm. Joshua nodded and said, Yes, some gods believe humans are worthy of greater knowledge and freedom, so they fight with us. Evil gods and their loyalist human followers fight against their brethren and the humans. See, I know about the war. Killian's face pursed slightly, containing irritation. What I wanted to teach you today, Joshua, is this. Vulcan, also known as Hephaestus to the Greeks, formed a sword so powerful it could kill a god. With it, he slew his mother for crippling him. Juno's death signaled to the world that gods can die. The Prometheus was correct. Gods who loved humans sided with them against those who loved power. Humans took sides between the two camps of gods, and a war rages both on Earth and in the divine realm. Joshua sat forward, his eyes wide. Really? But what happened to Prometheus? Vulcan freed him from his bondage, hoping to gain an ally now that the heavens were against him. However, a battle was fought between the gods. Vulcan died at the hand of his own father, for a chief god can execute one of his own. Prometheus brought to humanity a new power, a way to contend against the gods. What sort of power? Killian quietly said. We do not know. Well, what happened to Prometheus? I cannot say. However, it is believed he died. Joshua asked, What happened to this weapon of Vulcan's? It is likely in the hands of the gods still. Killian looked over at the window. My, look at the time. Your lessons are over for today. Joshua quickly shuffled his scrolls into his satchel and raced out the room so fast that Killian didn't have time to tell him what to read tonight before tomorrow's lecture. Speeding across the courtyard of the grand estate, Joshua picked up even more speed when he saw a contingent of finely dressed ladies. In the middle of this gaggle was a beautiful young lady with gold adornments in her hair. Skidding to a stop, Joshua attempted to cool off and not glisten from sweat all over his skin. He toyed with a special bit of jewelry in his satchel he had brought with him this morning. The group of women approached. Most hardly noticed the impatient young man standing in the path.
"I'm sure you didn't."
"Well, of course she did."
"Was he dressed in armor?"
The girls were all showering Amose with giggly questions. Joshua cleared his throat.
Amose?
They didn't notice him.
"Amose!"
he called out. Finally, the pretty girl noticed her name and saw Joshua nervously standing there.
"Oh, good evening, Joshua. How are the grapes?"
He frowned. "I wouldn't know. My father is tending to the field right now."
"Oh, right. So, you finish your lesson for today?"
Of course. I was hoping maybe you might enjoy an evening walk with me." He felt that sweat returning. She almost answered, but her words were lost as the girls behind her all chortled.
"Quiet!"
she commanded, and her friends settled down. Joshua said, "Did I say something funny?"
"No, you did not."
She came closer to him, her face filled with compassion. She took his hand. Joshua smiled. "So, will you go with me?" One girl blurted out,
"I doubt Sebney would approve."
"Sebney?" Joshua asked. Hamose gave him a kind smile.
"Sebney, the warrior, has asked for my hand, and I have said yes. I know you have always been interested in me, but the matter is now settled."
"Sebney?"
Joshua felt as though a pyramid had been dropped on him.
"But he is just a spear-bearer."
Another girl rudely corrected him.
"Sebney just returned from the Persian front. He fought with great generals and helped win the battle of Knife Point against a god army. He came home rich and famous, more than a match for you, farmer's boy."
"Now stop it," Amose commanded. "Don't make him feel bad. My father loves Joshua, and he is smart, kind, and off with you."
She shooed her friends away.
I'm happy for you."
Amose smiled at him.
"Thank you. I am sorry there was nothing between us. Now I have to go and have dinner with my family. I suppose I shouldn't be around you too much. Wouldn't want to upset my future husband. You understand?"
He nodded, unable to form words. She gave him a gentle kiss and then left him alone in the courtyard. Distraught, Joshua left his home and wandered into the desert, hoping to perish under the sun. He couldn't imagine life lived in such disgrace. After days of wandering, he came upon a natural cistern in the lands of the Ishmaelites. The water was very low, for it was early in the dry season. He was thirsty, so he climbed in and fell into the water at the bottom. Once he had drunk the stale, dusty water, he saw something odd glistening in the moonlight. A small oil lamp, made of bronze and carved with intricate design, sat there. "This is odd," he muttered to himself. Picking up the lamp, he felt that it was warm, even after sitting in this cold water all this time. Looking deep into the etchings, he saw words in a language not common to his people. He had studied under Potiphar's scholars and knew enough to read a little of the text.
Beware, twist the words, unfortunate, evil resides within.
He threw the lamp down and spat at it. A cursed artifact! He knew enough to fear this thing. The recent wars against the godlike beings had left many strange and powerful items laying around. Anyone should avoid such items unless they know how to deal with them. Sitting there in that damp cistern, he pondered if he should just give up here. He wasn't a good farmer. He wasn't a powerful warrior. The governor liked him and gave him an education in hopes of providing him some kind of useful skill. But what did it matter? He is such a pathetic human being that no one will truly ever care for him. He can't even find the nerve to care for himself. Wallowing in self-pity for a few hours, his eyes fell upon that lamp again. What was it? What kind of strange power resided within? As he pondered the lamp, he realized he didn't want to perish out here. He wanted to try at least one more time. What if he discovered the nature of this artifact?
What if he brought it back to Egypt to be destroyed? Could he gain the favor of the Pharaoh? Could he be showered with enough glory to win Amose away from her suitor?
I must try, he whispered in the darkness. Grabbing that lamp, he managed his way out of the hole in the ground, back into the dry night air.
Joshua journeyed for a full day back toward his homelands. It was a long walk, but he was certain of his victory. On the evening of the first leg of this journey, he rested by the road and looked up at that lamp again. Something about this item fascinated him. He wanted to know what was inside, but he couldn't bring himself to look out of fear for his life. He examined the writing closer and pondered how he would approach the Pharaoh. It would look better if he could explain more about those mismatched words. He may not be a warrior, but he had grown quite knowledgeable. Now he could use this strength to impress people.
Oh, this stupid thing is so dirty. I can't even read it.
Using his sleeve, he rubbed the surface of the bronze lamp to clean it off. It rattled in his hands, and he nearly dropped it. Realizing he had awoken something within, he gazed at it with intensity. Finally, he could read it. Beware the wicked jinn. He will twist the words spoken to him. Misfortune is all he will give. Lock him inside if you wish to live. As the last words came out of his mouth, the top of the lamp blew off and a billowing thick cloud of smoke came out. This cloud transformed into half a large man that floated above the wispy smog beneath him. It was an enormous blue-skinned person who appeared as a powerful man, at least from the waist up. He floated aloft with only smoke as legs, and a wicked sneer spread on his face.
Who has freed me, the great blue jinn?
The words echoed back from the distant hills. Joshua held an arm up in fear.
It was I?
Ha ha! Such a pitiful mortal, cowering in fear. Stand up, shout for joy. You have gained much this day, little one.
Joshua was uncertain what to make of all of this. This thing was happy, joyous, in fact, and speaking amicably. Trembling arms lowered, he found the words to say,
What are you?
I am the Blue Jinn, a great and powerful lord of magic. Tell me, what is the age? How long have I been imprisoned in that accursed lamp?
Joshua straightened up. It's the second age of man.
Then the war with the gods?
Joshua gulped.
It still progresses.
Then it hasn't been long.
The great blue man leaned over on his cloud and looked deeply at Joshua.
Tell me, little mortal, whom do you worship?
Worship?
Joshua's voice almost squeaked as he said that word.
Yes! Worship! Honor! Which god do you owe yourself to?
Well, powerful lord, the leader of the evil god army is Ra. He has betrayed us. We Egyptians worship no one, sir.
Ha ha, I see. So you side with Ra, or with the mortals?
Joshua grew more worried about this line of questions, but he would not betray his loyalties.
Ra has abandoned us and seeks our dominion. I side with the mortals in this war, though I'm no warrior.
Good, good!
This seemed to please the blue jinn.
Are you going to kill me, sir?
You amuse me, little one. Of course I'll not kill you. I cannot kill. It is against the rules that govern the jinns. On the contrary, I offer you a wish. You may have what your heart desires, a gift for freeing me of that damned lamp. Speak, and it shall be.
Joshua should have heeded the many legends of jinns and the warnings on the lamp, but his heart was still yearning badly for the love he had lost to a stronger man. His wish came out before the thoughts were properly weighed.
I wish to be a powerful man, a hero in this god war.
The blue jinn paused and looked at Joshua.
Then it has come to pass. The wish I have been waiting to grant has been spoken. So much is set into motion now, mortal. It shall be amusing to see what comes of this.
Joshua wasn't certain why this jinn was so amused.
Will you hurt me?
No, little man. I shall give you something powerful, something you cannot possibly fathom. Yet, I will enjoy this. Boy of Egypt, land of the animal-faced gods, let them see their visage in you. To a path you will go to grant what you wish to know.
What?
Before an answer could come, a flash of light filled his eyes, and he was thrown like a leaf on the wind. He flew through the air, half-conscious, and with a lot of pain all over him. His body was changing, but he could not see what he was becoming. All he saw was water distantly below him, stars hanging above him, and the clouds passing around him as great waves. Into the night he flew until he fell unconscious on the ground.